Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
We're excited to be joined by Ian Cummings, who's a NFL draft analyst at Pro Football Network. Ian, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I remember we were on last year talking about the draft too, and we're under a month away now. We're on the home stretch, which is fun. We've been speculating about what might happen for so long. It's going to be nice to get some actual landing spots for these guys, but this class has been a lot of fun to follow. The wide receiver group, the quarterback group, but a lot of depth across the board. So I'm excited here to talk with you guys about it. It's going to be a fun one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, Ian. Appreciate you coming back on the show. You were a great guest last time. Love having you on during this time of year, obviously, because this is really your expertise here, the NFL draft, and it is a great class on paper, right? We've got a lot of deep position groups, a lot of really intriguing prospects, and it's going to be fun to dive into these here. I want to start here, though, Ian. Every year, there's always some prospects that certain guys are higher on than other guys. And we all read the mock drafts and everybody else's rankings and all these different analysts. I'm sure you do as well in your industry, of course. Which prospect or prospects for that matter, do you feel like you're higher on than most other draft analysts this season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, and I'll try and go in multiple tiers here. So an easy one is Drake May. There's been kind of a movement that he's been falling a little bit. So there's some reports that maybe he'll be QB4, right? You know, so a lot of conflicting reports around him, but he's still a QB1 candidate for me. Him and Caleb Williams are essentially tied on my board, but I really love the talent that he brings to the table at 6'4", 225. I think people sleep on his mobility as a runner. He's got some legit Josh Allen upside to him. He's very, very good in space. He's got great speed, agility for his size, really physical, but he's got, you know, some agility to him too. I was watching his Duke tape from 2023 and he straight up hurdles a guy in open field too. So, you know, he's got that athletic ability, that creation ability, but then his pocket navigation, his leverage IQ, his ability to manipulate DBs and anticipate windows, and then capitalize with hyper elite arm talent. I really think he slept on as a QB prospect, not in the sense that, you know, we know he's going to go round one, but I think he's up there with Williams as the top guy. It's 1A and 1B for me. So I'm higher on him, I would say, but I'm confident in that evaluation. Going down the board, I'll throw in a wide receiver. Jalen Polk from Washington is a good one. He's often viewed in the day two range, but I have a top 35 grade on him. I'm very high in what he brings to the table. He kind of fits that Puka profile, in my opinion. 6'1", 203, around 32-inch arms, and he's very, very versatile. His alignment flexibility is one of his strongest traits. He can take snaps out of the slot, in motion, on the boundary. He's still refining his route tree a little bit more, but he's very fluid and very explosive, and he can create late snap separation. And the things that made Puka so successful in his rookie season, obviously you got to have that drive and that mentality, but he entered a perfect situation with Sean McVay, who schemed him opportunities, and that alignment versatility allowed him to be integrated immediately. And then not only that, he has the strong hands and the instincts to convert at the catch point time and time again. And that's something I see on Polk's tape as well. So Jalen Polk is a guy that I'm high on as well. At tight end, Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. He's my tight end too. Could be a top 50 guy for me when it's all said and done. I'm a big fan of what he has to offer, the fluidity, the route tree, the versatility, but also a very explosive athlete at 6'4", 250, good rack, strong hands over the middle. Just a really solid player who I think we're sleeping on. I think he can be a really good starter year in and year out, 60-plus catches, really productive, and a versatile blocker as well. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I like Chop Robinson from Penn State a lot. I know there's some fluctuations across the board where he's ranked, but explosive, really good speed rusher, very good bend as well. I think his hand usage is still improving, but the way that he can channel power from his burst and twitch makes me really confident in his projection. I think you can play him from a multitude of spots and alignments, and he can just wreak havoc on offensive linemen. And then one more guy I'll throw out there, Jadrian Taylor-Demerson from Texas Tech. And the industry is starting to come around on him, but he's a top 64 player for me. I'm a big fan of his versatility, his football IQ. He can play single high or two high. He can play in support, explosive, rangy playmaker with that two-phase ability. I know the comp has been made to Tyrann Mathieu at times. I'm still working on my comp for him, but I have no doubts that he can be a plus starter on a defensive secondary and be a really good player for a long time.
Great. Hey, once again, thanks for joining us. You know, my question really is really truly about Michael Penix. He seems to be the one enigma this draft? I mean, is it his age? Is it the knees? So I kind of have a few questions here. One, if he never had the knee issues and had the same college career, where would you rank him? And now after the pro day, where I guess there was a range between a 4.46 today, 4.6, I think people have settled between a 4.57 and a 4.6 in terms of his 40 and the measurables that he had during his pro day. Like, where do you see him going now? Because he seems to be the one guy that it's either the knees, it's this, it's that, it's the, you know, the national championship performance, or it's the knees from 2 years ago. Like, where do you see Michael Penix standing today?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the medical check was a big checkpoint for him this offseason, obviously at the NFL Combine. There's a lot of anticipation building in. How is he going to test? Is it going to be red flagged by NFL teams? And he came back clean. So that was a big thing for him. And I think, you know, I wrote in my report before the Combine, that was the biggest roadblock for him, challenging for round one capital, was the medicals. So now that he's clean, I think he could sneak into round one. And I think, you know, you've got that group of quarterbacks. Obviously, you have Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy. But if five QBs go in round one, to me, I think he has the best chance to be that fifth guy. Because like you said, if that knee injury never happens and he has the same collegiate career, where does he go? I think we can answer that question now because we've learned that the medical checks came back clean. So the knee injury doesn't really matter. Obviously, it's something to take into account. But NFL teams and doctors looked at it and discerned that it's not going to be an issue for durability down the road. So if all things considered, if all things are cleared and it's not an issue, I think round one is definitely a possibility for him. I think you still have some issues on tape to correct. And for a 24-year-old quarterback, you are worried that some of the bad habits on tape will be a little more set in stone than a 21-year-old like McCarthy or May, right? But with Penix, just the ability to, you know, he's a gunslinger. I think that's the best word for it. You know, he's a gunslinger. He can sling it down the field. He can hit really tight windows with that drive velocity, a really strong arm, very competitive player. He's got great field vision. He can pick out small windows outside the numbers, outside the hashes, you know, cover two whole shots with that velocity. He can make some really impressive throws. I think with him, the biggest thing is mechanically can be a little arm dominant. Sometimes the footwork can improve. I think he improved it as pro day, but you want to see it over a larger sample size, keep that base width, you know, under control, not get too wide on a step up. And then at the same time too, you know, his hip stiffness is something that shows up. He ran the 40-yard dash in the 4.5 range. And we know when he's in a straight line, he can run. He's got some really nice vertical athleticism. But one thing that separates May from Penix, both prototypically sized guys, but watching Drake May redirect and change direction and evade pocket threats, right? You know, he's very, very fluid and agile on the lateral plane. Michael Penix Jr. is a little more high cut, a little bit stiffer in his hips, and that can impact his creation capacity. And then when he's rolling off platform too, not the most natural off platform thrower, which in the modern NFL, not only for off script plays, but also on boot actions and rollouts, you need to be able to do that. And he's not quite as consistent. So, you know, those are things that might confine him to the pocket, even with his speed in a straight line. But in that phase, I do think if he can stay healthy, you could be getting, you know, a Matthew Stafford-esque passer, a guy who has the arm strength and arm elasticity to elongate angles and windows, who's got the strength to fit it into tight windows down the field, who's fearless, a gunslinger. You know, if he can work on throwing over the middle of the field a little bit more consistently, if he can hone down some mechanical things, I do think in the right situation, he can be a solid starter at QB. So there's a lot of upside there for sure, but also diluting factors for a 24-year-old that would put him behind a guy like McCarthy or Daniels or May, but still a lot to like. I think if there's a fifth QB to go in round one, he would be my choice.
Yeah, that's a great take there on Michael Penix. And it kind of got me thinking, are we underrating this guy a little bit? Because when you made the Matthew Stafford comparison, I thought, wow, that's a comp I haven't heard, and I really like it. Obviously, we know Matthew Stafford is basically a borderline Hall of Famer, a Super Bowl champion, a guy that was basically a top 10 quarterback for the majority of his career. If his ceiling is a guy like that, could we be looking back in a couple of years and saying, wow, how did Michael Penix slip to fill in the blank in this draft?
Yeah, absolutely. If he goes to the right spot, you know, I think that's key for him. He'll need a place with good blocking up the interior, right? Because he is a little bit stiffer in the hips. So you wonder if he's going to be able to, you know, counteract that early on in his career. But absolutely, I think, you know, most of the components that you're looking for, you know, being able to win from the pocket. The processing ability is very strong, I think. You know, there are a few aberrations over the middle of the field with anticipation, but that's not uncommon for young QBs. And, you know, often middle of the field throwing is just a little bit tougher because you have coverage looks from the boundary and the middle layering together. So there's more overlapping parts and be a little bit tougher to sift through that. So it's not uncommon for a young QB to go through that. But looking at what he has, you know, in terms of the traits and the toughness, the gunslinger mentality, and, you know, going to the Stafford comp too, I think that's a very high-end comp. That's probably the maximum comp for him is Stafford. If he reaches a peak, he can be that kind of long-term starter for a team in the right situation. But, you know, going back to Stafford's early career with the Detroit Lions, you know, there were comebacks where he was gutting through injuries, leading his team, even when he's clearly in pain on the field. And then you go back to 2023, there were some games where Penix, you know, that first Oregon game was a big one, where he was clearly in pain, he was gutting through it, and he led his team to the win. And ultimately, because of that, they made the Pac-12 championship and made the CFP playoffs. So, you know, he's a guy who's going to fight tooth and nail. And I think that's going to win over NFL evaluators and coaches too. But to your initial question, I think absolutely. You know, I think if he lands in the right spot, hindsight is 2020, we may look back and think, you know, hey, this guy had the physical talent. He had the mentality. Why didn't we bank on that enough? Why weren't we more confident in that projection, right? So his draft range is going to be interesting because, like I told Alex earlier, I thought the medicals were the main roadblock to getting round one capital. Now the question is, where does he go, right? Because we've seen some mock drafts. I remember Daniel Jeremiah had a mock where he went 13th overall to the Raiders, right? So there are some projections that have him going that high, and then there are some mocks that have him slipping to round two still. So what ultimately is going to happen, we don't know. And last year with Will Levis, it was kind of a similar conversation. There were some mocks that had him going top 10 because if the upside was there, he ended up falling to round two to the Titans. So it's very tough to get a read on what the, you know, pinpoint the exact outcome. But with Penix, I do think there's enough there where, hey, he can go in round one, land in the right situation, make the most of it. Yeah, I think people will look back and say we should have given him more credence as a legit first-round prospect.
You know, and not to just really harp more on Michael Penix, looking at your most recent mock draft, the trades that you had going on, especially with Minnesota moving up to get Drake May at 3, you had them nabbing Michael Penix at 23, which, you know, and just looking at that, that seemed like a great fit and great value for New England Patriots with the trade and everything. But I wanted to really talk a little bit more about some of the defensive players and where you have the edge rushers, because from my evaluation, there just doesn't seem to be enough. There seems to be obviously the high two in terms of Turner and then Jared Verse. And then I see that you also have, we talked about Chop Robinson, and then there's the Latu. But then I see the Darius Robinson, who's a very interesting piece here, and I don't know where I had him. I kind of have him a little in the second round, maybe the top 15 of the second round, but I see you have him in the first round. Do you think teams value him? Is it because of what we're looking at edges in the draft, or is he really, truly a first-round talent?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, and I want to preface by saying this, every mock draft is different, right? You know, every mock draft is just, it's an exercise to explore more outcomes. So one mock draft, I could have Darius Robinson going 31 to the 49ers. Another mock draft, maybe he falls outside the top 50, right? I think that's the range for him, is late first round, early to mid second round. So, you know, there's a range of outcomes for sure. I don't think he's a lock to go first round. I think his profile is a little bit confounding because he's kind of a hybrid player. You know, he's got some three tech ability. You can put him inside on pass rushing downs, but he can play five tech on running downs too. And he also showed that at 6'5", 290, he could rush outside the tackle from seven tech, you know, as an edge rusher and get around the apex with burst and bend. So, you know, he's a very exciting player. I liken him to, I think at its maximum, I think you could get a Denico Autry type of player, which is very solid, you know. So, but going back to the edge group, yeah, I think there's that first round group. You got Dallas Turner, who's my edge one. His physical upside is just incredible. He can be a game wrecker. Chop Robinson, explosive, agile, bendy. You know, he's got great speed and power too. So he's up there. Jared Verse, 6'4", 250, you know, really good length, really good power. Again, really solid run defender as well. So he'll be a good pro. And then Latu, for his size, you know, as big as he is really fluid and is probably the best hand technician, you know, pass rusher in this class. So he's very good as well. After that group, I think it does dip down a little bit. And that's kind of the key with this class is that if you need a premier edge rusher, if you're a team that really needs one, you might have to jump at the gun to take one of those four guys in round one, because it's not a guarantee that you'll get one down the road. You know, I have Darius Robinson in that next group. Adisa Isaac from Penn State is another one. He's a top 50 guy for me, so he's there. He fills out that depth a little bit. But then you got guys like Marshawn Neyland from Western Michigan, who's more of a top 75 guy for me. You got Brandon Dorlis, who's kind of another hybrid, right? Which top 75, solid, but round two might be a little rich for him. Braylon Trice, same deal. Round two might be a little rich. Speed to power guy who doesn't have elite measurables or bend, so you wonder about that. And then you get into developmental guys like Austin Booker, who's got pretty good pass rushing nuance, but needs to fill out his frame. Jalix Hunt from Houston Christian, who's very explosive, athletic, great length, but again, is a former safety. He's still learning the position. So the moral of the story is, yeah, I think for the edge class specifically, you look at the top four guys, they're really good, but it definitely drops off after that. So I think there's more pressure on the teams that really need a premier edge to take them early, because you might not get a chance later on.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Darius Robinson is a guy that I love the tape, love what we saw from him at the Senior Bowl. And then the combine kind of raised a little bit of red flags for me. And I thought, I tend to lean more on tape and what we see on the field more than the measurables. But I do think they matter. And I do think what you do at the combine is important. So he's an interesting prospect for sure. It'll be really interesting to see what kind of fit he has, where he goes in this draft, and where he fits on a team at the next level. He's a very intriguing player for me. Focus in on the first round here for a second here. You've named a lot of players all over the place. I love the evaluations here, but let's face it. We know there's a lot of guys in the first round every single year that have first round grades but don't pan out. It's just the nature of this NFL draft. Who's a first round pick or a guy that everyone pretty much has circled in as a first round projection, or maybe multiple picks for that matter, that you think we're going to look back and they're going to be a bust?
Yeah, it's a good question, because, you know, as much as we like to say, yeah, they're all going to work out, we don't know for sure. As a draft analyst, I try to be optimistic. I try to think within a lens of what can they do, because we don't know, you know, at the end of the day. So my MO is always be constructive. You know, if they have flaws, see what they can work on, right? Say how they can improve that, because in the right situation, they can do that, right? So I never want to call a guy a bust right away or you know, hedge my career on, oh, this guy's a bust. You heard it here first. No, that's not. You know, that's not how we do things. You know, that's not how you should do things as an evaluator. But you mentioned it. It's the name of the game. Some guys will pan out and some won't. Honestly, you know, you're never going to bat 100%. A couple guys that stand out to me in this class who have that high bust potential. Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma is one that I look at. Offensive tackle. The OT group is so strong at the top, man. You got seven or eight guys who could go round one. There's no way they're all going to hit, right? There's no way. Very low chance that they're all going to hit. You know, going 100%, 8 out of 8, 7 out of 7 is unheard of. I look at Guyton, and I see a guy who definitely needs to improve his precision with his hand usage. Definitely can get a little too wide against power sometimes, and his strikes don't always land. And that can impact his technique and force him to bear hug guys. And then he can get called for holding penalties, right? I think his leveraging in the run game can also improve. He plays with the tall pad level a lot. That can impact his balance against power, but also his power drive from his lower body. So you still have a lot of things to work on. That's the tough part with him, because he is so talented. We saw it at the Senior Bowl. Big reason he won guys over early on in that week is because he's very talented and he's very competitive. He's around 6'7", 325, 34-inch arms, very explosive athlete out of his stance, really good competitive toughness and energy as an athlete, you know. And I think the one thing that wins me over with him, that makes me confident that he can develop, is his flexibility. He's very flexible. You know, unlike most taller guys, he can acquire leverage very easily. He can flex his frame to absorb power. You know, he can bend to kind of absorb blocks and get around guys. But, you know, you wonder, you know, how far can he get without refining his technical tool set, right? So there's a lot of work to do with him. And so that's why I don't know if he's going to be able to get to that point. You know, I was exploring offensive line comparisons today. And one that stood out, an athletic comparison that stood out for Tyler Guyton, was Alex Barron for the Los Angeles Rams, St. Louis Rams back in the day. And he had a short career as their right tackle and ended up flaming out. And it's just, you know, you wonder if a guy is relying on athleticism and length and flexibility too much, how long is it going to last before he ultimately does flame out? Because guys are more technically sound in the NFL. And Tyler Guyton, that's one concern I have with him. So he's probably one of the bigger ones with that bust potential in round one. Another one that I would bring up is A.D. Mitchell, wide receiver from Texas. I think his star potential is very high, but there are some questions with effort on tape on a down-to-down basis, right? You wonder, is he going to be able to provide 100% on a down-to-down basis? And it's tough because I love the profile. I love the scouting profile. He's got speed. He's got burst. He's got twitch and agility. One of the best route runners in the class, I think, for his size, 6'2", 205, to sink and redirect the way he does. It's uncanny. It's incredible, right? But you just wonder mentally, is he going to be able to bring 100% on a down-to-down basis? Is he going to fade out on some reps where he shouldn't, right? You know, so, and is he going to let the ball into his frame sometimes too? You know, occasionally he does body catch and that can be a concern. I think he has good hand technique, but you wonder again, you know, the margin for error is very slim. And if you're a first round pick, the expectations are heightened even more. So there are a lot of questions that come with that. So those are two guys I think are at the top of the list. But overall, I think it's a class that, you know, usually if a guy goes round one, there's merit for that decision. Sometimes it doesn't work out, right? And occasionally you do have a head scratching pick that's like, well, you probably shouldn't have gone that high. But by and large, you're working with the physical talent that can amount to something. It's just a matter of there's so many variables that go into it.
You know, sticking with the wide receiver theme, we obviously know that there's Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, and Malik Nabers. I'm assuming they're probably your top three as well. How far apart do you have those three players in terms of your ranking?
Yeah, it's a good question. Marvin Harrison Jr. is on my scale above a 9.5. He's actually my highest graded receiver prospect ever with my grading scale, and you know, that's kind of there's an asterisk there. I've only been grading for like 4 years, so back to Ja'Marr Chase, and even then I had to adjust my scale a little bit, so I'm making changes to it every year. But he does grade slightly higher than Ja'Marr Chase for me, so he's my highest graded receiver prospect in my career. Malik Nabers, though, is above a 9. He's a blue chip prospect for me. There's a slight gap. Marvin Harrison Jr. is my top overall prospect, not accounting for positional value. I think Nabers is 6 or 7. And then Rome Odunze is 9 or 10. Odunze is right outside the blue chip range in the 8.9 range, but still really close to Nabers. And I think Odunze, you could argue he's the more well-rounded prospect right now because he's such a fluid route runner, really good ball tracking ability and body control in contested situations. And then he's got some rack to him as well. So I think all of those guys bring really intriguing skill sets, really exciting skill sets. But for me, it's Marvin Harrison Jr., slight gap, Malik Nabers, even smaller gap, and then Rome Odunze. And then, you know, you got Brian Thomas Jr. as my wide receiver 4, but those three are definitely separated at the top. People call them the big three, and there's a reason. They're all legit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, such a good wide receiver class. The top of this class, I think, is very elite. I think all three of them, like you said, have big-time star potential. But then it's also such a deep class. So you're going to have value in the second, third round. There's going to be some really good players available. It's going to be a lot of fun to see kind of where these guys go and how they come off the board here. Now, if you were in the war room for an NFL team, your team's on the clock, hypothetical obviously here, but who's the guy that you are pounding the table for saying, look, guys, we have to draft this guy? Who's your guy?
Oh, how much time you got? It's tough. I got to pick one, man. I want to pick more, but if I had to pick one guy that I would pound the table for, I've got it. Mike Sainer still, Michigan defensive back. He is the one. I think, you know, because with first-round guys, obviously, right, like Brock Bowers, Marvin Harrison Jr., like, yeah, obviously, but I think pounding the table implies that, you know, you're taking a stand when they might not be the consensus top guy on the board at that point in time, right? So I think if you're in the day two range and the board starts to get a little more congested, right, you know, a little more cluttered, who are you picking out of that scrum and saying he can be an impact player? I'm picking Mike Sanders still from Michigan. He's a top 50 guy for me. A little bit older, but he's going to be an instant starter in the slot, and he's got safety and boundary versatility as well. He's just a competitor, man. I look at his tape, explosive, agile, tenacious, really good in support, very good at contact at the catch point. He's a former wide receiver, so he can make plays on the ball as well. But what wins me over with Mike Sanders still, beyond the athleticism, beyond the competitive mentality, man, he is so versatile and well-versed in coverage. He is one of the most intelligent coverage defenders that I've watched. In zone, his spacing is immaculate. He's very good in off-man with, you know, kick slides and modulating his pedal He's got very good corrective athleticism over top stems. He's got closing speed, explosiveness, ball skills. Every box that you need to check aside from size, right? He's a little undersized, but he plays bigger than that. I think all of those things he can provide. So you're looking at a nickel DB, a high level nickel B, and we've seen in the modern NFL, you know, defenses are in nickel most of the time, right? Like that's essentially the new base defense is getting five defensive backs out there. So you need guys who can fulfill that role both against the run and the pass. And to me, Sanders still is a high level nickel defender, high level nickel starter, but then he can play the boundary or field safety if you need him to. He's got that kind of versatility. So I'm a big fan of what he has to offer. I think every secondary needs to be a cohesive unit, especially against the offensive looks that they're getting in the modern NFL. And Sanders still, with his communication, his versatility, his flexibility and playmaking upside in both phases, man, I think he's a piece you can insert right away and he will help you take the next step. He's a phenomenal player.
Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. I personally love the Pick'em game. Just pick between 2 and 5 players to build a Pick'em entry. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. You can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up today with promo code PGF. That's promo code PGF to get your first deposit doubled up to $100. The official ticketing app of Pintglass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
Last question for me. Cooper DeJean. I mean, I've heard him cornerback. I've heard him safety. From your view, What is he in the NFL?
I think he projects best as a safety, but there's a schematic caveat here. If you're a team that runs more cover three, middle field closed, I do think he can play, he can stick a corner in those schematic looks, right? So I think, you know, cover three, middle field closed, you're looking at corners who are probably going to be more, you can play press man out of those looks, but off man, zone, side saddle more often, right? So if you're in side saddle, you know, you're turning your back to the sideline, your hips are vertical, right? And if you're Cooper DeJean, you can play with your eyes to the quarterback in that scenario. You can feel the receiver in your blind spot with your hips. His ability, what makes him special as a player, right, is his eye discipline, his route recognition, and his ability to process and flow to the ball, right? Because he's a phenomenal athlete, but also a processor, a playmaker, and just an instinctive defender who, when his eyes are on the QB, he can key in on intent so quickly, close on the ball, and make plays. So with his eyes to the QB, that's where you want him playing the most. So if you're in side saddle, he's going to be in that situation. Side saddle, cover three looks. I love his gliding athleticism and his processing and how he translates there. But the problem is, in the NFL, I think we're seeing more and more, if you have a defense, right, you know, some defenses are more press man oriented, some are more zone oriented, but by and large, you have to be able to play a certain coverage based on the situation, right? So for instance, if it's third and short, third and medium, right, maybe you want to go cover zero and press man and disrupt wide receivers timing routes so that the quarterback needs to wait a little longer, let the pressure get there, right? So each situation calls for a different coverage, and I don't know if Cooper DeJean has the fluidity to play press man consistently and off man consistently against NFL athletes. I think he's very good. He's very athletic. I think he's fluid enough, but on sharp redirections, you do see that stiffness a little bit, and it can be under the microscope. So with that in mind, I think cover three looks, you know, maybe on longer downs, he can play a corner, he can stick a corner, but I would rather have him at field safety, because I think in a safety role, his eyes are the quarterback all the time, and he's so good at route recognition, you know, understanding play concepts and capitalizing, triggering quickly, and then he's got the explosiveness, the closing speed, the ball skills, the playmaking ability to capitalize on that, close on passes, and ultimately generate turnovers too. And then also being 6 foot, over 200 pounds, he's very good in support. He's essentially a dime linebacker in support, man, because he's very strong combating blocks, very physical, triggering downhill. I think you have all the components of a safety in a corner prospect. So you can keep a corner in certain looks for sure. But I think the move to safety not only mitigates his weaknesses, but also plays to his most effusive strengths and allows you to get the top end talent that you want from him.
Ian, this is going to be my final question here as well, and we'll let you get out of here. Our most recent episode, Alex and I broke down our top five quarterback rankings for this upcoming class. JJ McCarthy, why the sudden rise up draft boards? He's a guy that I understand some of the pros. I understand some of the things that people are pointing to and circling with him, but neither one of us feel like he's NFL ready. What are we missing with JJ McCarthy? Why has the hype gotten so big for this guy?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple parts to this question. I think the first part, why is he rising up the board? I think that can be boiled down to he's young and he's talented, right? As complex as the NFL evaluation process can be sometimes it's that simple. He's 21 years old. He does have 2 years of experience already. And he's talented. He's athletic. He's got a great arm. He's got a loose, elastic release. I like his angle freedom as well. You look at the talent that's there and the youth. NFL teams are going to look at that and say, I'll get that guy in my room. And it comes down to interviews as well, you know, evaluating the mental side. As long as he wins them over mentally, then they can look at the talent and the youth and say, I'll get him in my room and he can be special, right? You know, teams will, you know, sometimes overinflate their ability to develop guys, but hey, that's a part of the game. You know, you're not drafting him for what he is, you're drafting him for what he can be. And what McCarthy can be with all of the room that he has left to grow is a very good quarterback, right? Is he there right now? No, I don't think so. And I think that, you know, we kind of saw those limitations on his college tape at times, but you know, he's a winner, he's young, he's talented. Sometimes that's enough to lift a guy up the board. Now, in regards to the question, you know, what are you missing? I don't think you're missing anything. I just think his evaluation requires a little, it definitely requires a lot of nuance. I think that's the tough part, you know, because he simply wasn't asked to elevate that Michigan offense very often. you know, a lot of times they could rely on that running game and that defense to win games. And that's kind of what they did down the stretch, you know, especially late in the 2023 season. There were a lot of big games like the Big Ten Championship. I mean, McCarthy played well in that one, but, you know, there were most of those games down the stretch. He wasn't the driving force behind their success, right? You know, they weren't winning in spite of him. Like, he was playing well enough, but it wasn't like, you know, he was proving himself to be this effusive first round talent, right? There were still some questions about, can he actually elevate an offense when he's asked to, right? So I think with McCarthy, yeah, he's young, he's talented. And I think this is the thing that people sometimes not necessarily miss, but it's an added layer to the evaluation, is can he be inserted into an offense early in the NFL? And not only that, can he operate the offense within the structure, right? You hear people saying he's a fit for a Shanahan offense or a McVay offense, right? And it's kind of redundant at this point, because at this point, it feels like half of the league is a Shanahan or McVay derived offense, right? So it's pretty much half the league at this point. But, you know, what does a quarterback need to do in that offense, right? Play on rhythm, which McCarthy can at the very least do that. They have to be mechanically sound. McCarthy does have very clean mechanics for his age, really clean energy channel, really efficient on his dropbacks, right? And he's got good accuracy in the short range as well. He can keep the offense on schedule. And that's enough sometimes, right? You know, you look at what Brock Purdy, big reason he was able to play so well in that San Francisco offense is because he keeps things on schedule, right? He can obviously create when he needs to, but, you know, one reason Shanahan, it didn't work with guys like Trey Lance, right, is because those guys weren't as comfortable working within the confines of the offense. And obviously the injury played a role too, but guys like Shanahan and McVay and schemes that are derived from that, you need to play on schedule just as much as you need to play off script, right? It's just as important because there's so many components to plays working the way they should. McCarthy does need to improve at going. I think his field vision is very inconsistent. I think he has shown he can anticipate, but it's definitely hot and cold with him. Sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off. His deep passing ability and his window anticipation in the deep third definitely needs to improve. I think there's still some mechanical aberrations and decision-making lapses with him as well. But the fact that he's young, he's talented, he's proven he can win, he's a competitive player, and then he can operate within the offense, he can keep things on rhythm, and he's a clean mechanical prospect. I think those are enough things for a coach to say, I can build the offense around him on day one while he's still growing, and we can be fine. We can keep it afloat. I think looking at that, you know, the tangible operational floor combined with the untapped upside that comes from his athleticism, his arm talent, I think those two things in tandem have worked to elevate his stock. And hey, in the right situation, he could pay back those dividends, right? But at the same time, in the wrong situation, you wonder if he's going to be able to reach that point. And that's ultimately the projection element of the NFL draft. It's one thing that we just won't know until it happens.
And absolutely great stuff, like always. Once again, guys, we've been joined by Ian Cummings, an NFL draft analyst for Pro Football Network. You can check out his work there and be sure to follow him on Twitter, X, whatever you guys want to call it nowadays, at @IC_draft. Ian, thanks again for coming on the show. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, guys. It's going to be fun to see what happens. All that's left to do is wait and see and hang along for the ride.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.